here today with none other than Lewis Lyman, brother of Frankie Lyman, and we hope to discuss rock and roll, rhythm blues, rhythm and blues, excuse me, and race music, as it was called back in the 50s, 40s, and 30s. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Mr. Lewis Lyman.
Good evening, Charles. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Now, can you enlighten us a little on this race music, rock and roll, rhythm and blues?
Well, we can start with race music.
Okay.
Now, race music is music called that because it was self-explanatory. You know, race music is music that was produced and supplied for the purpose of entertaining black people.
I see. Okay. Now, what was the rhythm and blues? How did that evolve from race music?
Well,
or was it the rhythm and music? What evolved from what? Can you explain that?
Well, about the mid to late 30s, early 40s, rhythm and blues evolved. The rhythm and blues, to my estimation, was really a very sophisticated way of channeling gospel music. You see, that's where it all really began.
I see.
From the church. That's why they call it race music, because it fluctuated or it emanated from the church itself.
Okay. Now, did you sing this gospel music?
Definitely. As a matter of fact, most of your prominent singers of the early 50s and on all had their foundation and roots from the church.
Mm-hmm.
You see, church in those days, you know, was like the backbone of the community that we got in the South.
That's
very important for the community. Most people, such as myself and my brothers, we got our thing from the church.
And, okay, now who taught you how to sing, though, actually?
The person who taught us how to sing was our father,
mm-hmm.
the Howard Lyman Sr.
Now, did he, so you sang in the church with him?
Right. He was singing in a group called the Harlem Mares.
I see. And the Harlem Mares, where was their claim? I mean, what did they, you know?
Well, the group emanated from the South, and my father was from Tennessee. So, I would imagine, one or two of the members of the Harlem Mares were friends of his from that area or from the southern state itself.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, a lot of migration took place from the South to the North. And my father and his friends were included in the migration.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many in your family, how many were they all boys? Four boys, I think.
Yeah, it was four boys and one girl.
One girl.
Uh-huh. But,
did she sing?
Not that I know of. No.
Uh-huh.
My father, you know, he decided one day to take us in the back room of the house and sit down and teach us how to sing.
Uh-huh.
And that's what he did. And God bless his soul. I'm glad he did.
Uh-huh.
As I said before, most church music was evolutionized and then, you know, processed, and you have what you call rhythm and blues. Still race music in itself, but now it's just changed.
It's just changed the name of it, yeah.
As time goes on, things change.
The music down at the end of the dial, as it used to be, eh?
Right.
Yeah. How did people think back then when they were coming up singing, young people, you know, groups, and what did they really see?
Well,
can you remember back that far?
Well, excuse me.
The images and
The feeling that I got, now that I think of it today as looking back on it then, it was almost a social peaceful era, mm-hmm. where tradition still held strong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the family fiber was still strong during the early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was only after the late to early 60s
mm-hmm.
that the family fiber began to decay and disintegrate
mm-hmm.
because of lack of communication. But in those days, it was the first time that it didn't matter whether you were singing race music or not. It just sounded good.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the 50s were what we call the melting pot era mm-hmm. musically.
Let me not confuse the audience out there. When we say race music, we don't mean that black people were singing racial music. It was that white people categorized it as race music,
right.
as black music, and it was not pop. It was not put into the pop areas, and was not played on the pop stations. It was played on stations down at the end of the dial, like WWRL,
right.
WADO. There were DJs like Dr. Tommy Small, as they called him. I'm sorry, Dr. Jive. Tommy Small was his name. Dr. Jive, Jocko. You know, and I tell you, there were many white kids that actually did learn, and I don't know if they snuck around from their family.
But speaking of that, Elvis snuck around the recording studio down in there on the other side of town.
Yes, yes.
So, and as a matter of fact, the owner of the studio, which was a white person, said, if I could only find a white person to take this music and commercialize. He found his dream come true.
Elvis Presley.
And God bless his soul too.
But see, I have a problem with that though. See, because in terms of monetary gain, in terms of media, in terms of just America being America, Elvis Presley was given credit, and he deserved the credit, but
commercially,
yes. Because what about all the artists that came out on those stations down at the end of the dial that made records that you didn't hear on the pop station? What about those artists that were great, and that when you saw them at the Apollo, you know there was no way an Elvis Presley or Bill Haley in the comments could outdo these artists in performance level. You knew that the black artists were just pushed away and not accepted, and some people just have this mentality of that's the way it is. That's the way it is, you know. It was not an awareness factor. There was not awareness factor. And I think the 60s, that's when the period came when the awareness came of what was really happening to our artists back then.
Well, the reason that you might be having a problem with that is because you're thinking just an opposite of, let's say, a white person who labeled that music race music to separate it. Now, what Elvis and Bill Haley and the Comets did was take that same music, transform it into their style, but we all knew where they got it from.
Mm-hmm.
What they did with our race music was to commercialize it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we owe them, you know, the commercialization of our music, because our people could not get it commercialized.
We didn't have the finances. And the American way is to take and just make, take and make.
Well, this is a capitalistic country, you know. It's everyone is equal. If you can make the same money, that's fine. If not, that's just too bad. You know, whoever's best is best. Elvis and his organization and et cetera, did was take this good music and let the world know about it. Mm-hmm. You know, we ourselves as a people could not do it ourselves. So therefore our white counterparts helped us.
Okay. You
know, let the world know what we had to say musically.
Yeah.
And, this is jumping the gun a little bit, but the most popular music on this planet is rock and roll music.
Yeah.
But coming back to your problem, I understand.
Well, given today's music, even today's music, I see it as...
It was the era of naivety. I think we said earlier this afternoon, you know, how 90% of the artists who initiated rock and roll mm-hmm. did it just for the glory,
mm-hmm.
you know, which was, in those days, quite romantic, you know. Like the comedian Eddie Murphy said, hey, you know, a singer, hey, if you can sing, you get all the girls you want.
Now, tell me about yourself. We're going to discuss about Frankie and the Teenagers, but I want to discuss about you and how you started with, well, how it evolved from the time you first started even singing with the Hollamads and
We were called the Hollamad Juniors.
Okay. The Hollamad Juniors.
Right. Yeah. What had happened was we stopped going to church because my mother and father had separated about 2 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a broken home, unquote, which happens a lot today than then. And those days, but nevertheless, that happened. So during that period, not being instructed, I just lost interest totally.
Mm-hmm.
But Frankie was undaunted. You know?
Mm-hmm.
He was ahead of his time.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept it up. In the meantime, my oldest brother, Howard, he pursued it his way. He had what they call a trio or a quartet. But prior to that, my brother my oldest brother Howard did perform together on Channel 13. I think the date was in 1952, I think, called Spotlight on Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
With Ralph Cooper, who incidentally said the amateur hour at the Harlem Theater. And but Frankie hung loose after that, you know, how he went his separate ways because the group started with
Now, how talented was Howard?
Well, Howard was very talented in a lot of ways. He could sing, and he was very creative as far as writing music. He played the sax well.
Mm-hmm.
And professionally speaking, if he hadn't graduated from high school, not necessarily, he was up for draft for the National League.
Wow.
The first base. My brothers, they were all talented.
Mm-hmm.
More ways than one.
Mm-hmm.
But Frankie, he spearheaded the family after my father left.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, he was the first one to get a job in the family.
How old was he when he got?
He was, Frankie was 9 then.
Right. So he was out there.
Right. I mean, it was on the corner, but he was out there. You know, my mother needed to help him.
He had to take over.
Sometimes the oldest is not the one that God wants to spearhead the family.
That's true.
Frankie was chosen to have that get up and go and let's go and get it.
Yeah.
So he spearheaded that. As a matter of fact, he was going to nightclubs at the age of 10.
Really?
It was a neighbor's daughter he was friends with, and her mother was an exotic dancer.
Oh, wow.
It's called a Tanya Jones, as a matter of fact.
Tanya Jones.
Any relation?
No, not really.
You sure?
It sounds close to my daughter's name, Tawana.
Okay. At any rate, this went on for a period, and I guess he caught on very fast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Young in there, and as far as the Teenagers were concerned, that's a strange story because he wasn't an original member of that.
I hear it was Herman's group.
Well, Herman was the lead singer.
Okay, Herman was the lead singer.
Yeah. But I guess you could call it Herman's Group, yeah, because and then Jimmy got together.
So those two were
so they I would say that Jimmy Merchant and Herman Santi are the world responsible for forming the Teenagers.
Right.
But they weren't called the Teenagers then. I think they were called the Chesterfields, if I'm not wrong.
Or the Premiers or something like that?
I think it was close to Chesterfield.
Now, where did Sherman come with that?
Well, I don't know the history of the formation of the Teenagers. All I know is that Frankie was the last member. I think he took someone's place, or they needed someone at the spare of the moment. I don't know how it goes. I think Jimmy explained it to me not too long ago, because we had a meeting several months ago. He explained to me that they were at this talent show, which is a school right next door where we lived, Edward W. Stitz. And they were short of voice. And Frankie, he always hung around them and, you know, can I get in the group, can I get in the group, you know. And this night, there he was, and they said, well, okay, you want to help us out? And, you know, he said, sure, I'll help out. But they didn't say he was in the group, but in his mind, he figured after that night, he was in the group. They were so successful with his participation that they kept him anyway.
Now, when did he take over the lead?
Well, that was an arbitration that was done by George Gold.
They heard his voice.
Well, it was not so much his audio, it was visual. George saw four tall guys and a small guy in the middle. George says, well, do you sing? So Frankie said, yeah, I sing. And he did a Valentine's song, Lily May Bell. He did it almost as good, if not better, than the Valentine's themselves, I was told.
Wow. And then they heard that. That was it.
Right.
And he saw dollar signs and...
Well, he saw something unique and different.
Yeah.
You know, at that particular time.
Yeah.
As you know, after they hit, after 6 months, he had everybody and his mother with him. Four guys and a little dude in the middle.
Yeah.
But it was my case also.
I remember that. There were so many groups with the little guy. With the high tenor voice. I mean, and so many groups that came from that area and then downtown. I mean, I can count them off and remember them, you know. But tell me about what, you know, your career. And
well, my career was decided for me after the success of my brother's career.
Okay.
That was due to a neighbor of ours called Lyndon Harold. And, he had aspirations to sing. And he knew another individual who was in the singing group himself called Rosilio Rocca.
That sounded like a paisano.
No, this is
Rosilio.
Rosilio
Rocca.
Roca. Right. And he's from the Dominican
Republic. Oh, okay.
At any rate, they had a groups of their own, and they got to learn. Lyndon happened to be a friend of the family, so he approached me, and I said, sure, I'll be in the group. But I thought I was in the background, because when I sang with my brothers, that's what I did.
Yeah,
I sang in the background.
Yeah.
And he says, no, you gotta sing lead. I said, sing lead? I said, hey, man, that's heavy. He said, hey, your brother can do it, you can do it too.
That's the deal.
That was the real deal. Well, he was a businessman at a very early age.
This was Rocca.
This was Lyndon Harrell.
Oh.
Now, and Lyndon, incidentally, he was younger than me. So he was 19 at the time. We called him the old man.
The old man, he was hanging out with some young kids.
Well, hey, Picasso did.
But listen, I remember seeing a movie in 1959, 57, I think, even before that, yeah, with Jamboree, 58. With Fats Domino, and then all of a sudden I saw these young guys, and there was this little guy in the middle, and it happened to be you. You know, I mean, wow, that blew my mind, you know, because I then, a year later, I remember, or 2 years later, I remember calling you on the phone and talking to you in 1959 or 1960. And I remember looking in the phone book for Lyman, saying Frank J. Lyman listed. You remember that? No, and listen, you know, folks, I will tell you this. I was a young groupie back then. I would have died for every record I could find by the teenagers or the teen chords. And I became an oldie collector, you know, in 1962. Can you imagine that? Yeah. I was, 1961, I was looking after those, trying to find the stuff from the 50s and all the groups that sounded like the teenagers. The Chanters, Bud Johnson and the Chanters. The group from Cincinnati, the Students, and Ohio, wherever they were from, you know, just so many groups. I mean, it was like coming out of your ears, you know. I mean, damn, Tiny Tim and the Hits. I mean, wedding bells are ringing. I mean, everybody was trying to sound like Frankie Lyman. I mean, it was unreal, really, you know. And you know.
But at the same time, they were the first real crossover group.
That's the thing. But that George Goldner had that in mind, I would assume, you know, when he...
Well, he heard it.
Yeah.
He heard it.
Because everybody loved him. How many times were they on... Well, how many times was Frankie or the teenagers on Ed Sullivan?
Well, Frankie was on there once.
Once.
If I'm not mistaken, he was on there twice.
No, he was on there more than that, man. I've seen him on there at least three times. I mean, he was on there 58, 57. He was on there singing Melinda, A Portable on My Shoulder. That's 58.
I believe you're right. Three times. I thought it was two.
He was on there a few times.
I thought it was just two.
Well, it might have been twice, but I've seen him sing. Yeah, no, I think it was, well, maybe it was another show I saw him on. He was on the Clay Cole show a few times, right? More than once.
Yo, definitely more than once.
Yeah, Clay Cole, because I remember he came out in a sailor's outfit, a little kid, like a sailor's outfit. He really looked funny. You don't remember that?
No.
Yeah. Cut.
Hey, play that scene.
We'll stay around you now and forever. Let it be me. Don't take this heaven from one. If you must cling to someone now and forever, let it be me. Each time we meet, love, I find complete love. Oh, without your sweet love, what would life be? So never leave me lonely. Tell me you love me only. Now and forever, let it be me. Each time we meet, love, I find complete love. Oh, without your sweet love, what would life be? So never leave me lonely. Tell me you love me only. Now that you're lonely, let it be me. That you're lonely, let it be. And that you're lonely, let it be.
Bom, 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 bom